Some say, though, that there were machinations and connections that lead back to this Warburg and Oppenheimer and Rothschild group into Japan, and that in fact the alliance between Germany and Japan was not just one of convenience, but rather one by design. Now, that's for another discussion. What have you found here in 41 with Roosevelt?
Well, as you said, he refuses to sell Japan any more steel, scrap, or oil. Japan were in the middle of the war against China, and without that, without those resources, they knew that they wouldn't be able to continue the war. And Roosevelt knew that this economic boycott would literally force the Japanese into attacking America, because if they don't get this stuff, then China has got it, and China can walk over Japan. So Japan was put in a situation where they attacked Pearl Harbor. Now, many, many, many people have talked about how Roosevelt knew what was going to be happening at Pearl Harbor, but deliberately let it happen to bring America into the war. But I think that's something for another time, really.
Yeah, well, we do know that that we had already been successfully intercepting all of their major transmissions out of Japan, so we already knew they were sending a fleet to Hawaii, and in fact he brought the ships into harbor and then lined them up side by side in dock in Pearl Harbor for the slaughter. And we lost on one ship alone, the Arizona. You know, thousands of men and sailors were killed that day. Anyway, let's talk a little bit here about Prescott Bush, father and grandfather of future American presidents George Herbert Walker and George W. respectively, and his company seized under the Trading with the Enemy Act. Now, can you talk a little bit about that? We've heard a lot of this in the alternate press. I'll discuss that for a moment.
Yeah, I mean, basically, what's happened here, this is something that the Alex Joneses like to focus on, to try and blame it all on Bush.
Yeah.
But we see here an early link with these people in Zionism, which, as we can see today, basically, he's been funding Hitler from America, and through this company that was seized under the Trading with the Enemy Act. And when you actually think about it, he's funding the German war at the same time as American soldiers being killed by German soldiers.
Yeah.
But one interesting point that I noticed was the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, have never criticised any of the Bushes for this. And they always very firmly behind trying to stay away from the Prescott Bush issue. And I think also later on, after the war, there's I mentioned how these sort of things are actually hushed up. Almost the law is passed or something in the when the reparations sorted out.
Well, and you know, the Harriman banking fortune, which he was using as his go-between bank, actually another group of crypto Zionist Jews who were working under the guise of being blue blood New England or new, you know, American generationally there and this and that, but in fact we're from Jewish heritage. Again, we come back to that same deception. Let's go here to the 18th. Zionist Itzhak Greenbaum, head of the Jewish Agency. Now, the Jewish Agency is really the umbrella group for World Zionism, and I've pointed this out recently in a couple of files. If people really want to know who's doing this to us, the ADL works for this group. The World Jewish Congress holds its allegiance to this group. This particular group is the Jewish Agency is the one that turns up everywhere you go, whether it be investigating the Flexner brothers developing vaccines to poison us or to destroy our education system or in fact to set up Israel. So can we talk a little bit about this man, Itzhak Greenbaum?
Yes, well, this is very important because we touched on this earlier about how it's the elite within this Jewish community that are using the community as a whole to, you know, sacrifice the ones at the bottom to benefit the ones at the top,
mm-hmm.
so they can garner sympathy. And what he's saying here is, and this was in a speech to the Zionist Executive Council in 1943, he said, if I'm asked, could you give from the United Jewish Appeal money to rescue Jews, I'd say no, and I'd say again no. So basically, doesn't want to rescue any Jews that you know, are in these areas, and he actually specifies one cow in Palestine is worth more than all the Jews in Poland. So the attitude there is, we're only interested in the Jews that come over to Israel. The ones that don't are going to serve a different purpose for us. They're going to be sacrificed so that we can then use them as, you know, political capital for us to say, look at how badly treated we are. So everything really neatly slots into place for these people for their long-term plans.
Well, let's go on here to 1944. On November 6th, Lord Moyne, a British minister resident in the Middle East, is assassinated in Cairo by two members of the Jewish terrorist group, the Stern Gang, led by future Prime Minister of Israel, Yitzhak Shamir. He is also responsible for the assassination attempt against Harold McMichael, the High Commissioner of the British Mandate of Palestine that same year. This is where we start seeing the emergence of this underground death squad assassin group called the Irgun, which become later on and into today the Shin Bet and the Mossad. They took their formation from these original groups. You'll find Menachem Begin involved when he was a murderer and bomber. You'll find many of them, the original people who set up in Palestine in the 30s taking part in this. They did horrendous things in Palestine, murdered, cut babies out of women's stomachs and everything. This was just a horrendous, horrendous group. You want to talk a little bit about Lord Moyne?
Yeah, well, I mean, this group mainly, Dale, because the interesting thing with the Stern Gang, the Irgun and what have you, is the amount of terrorists in there that go on to become prime ministers and presidents of Israel. Menachem Begin, in 1946, was asked by a journalist if he considered himself the father of terrorism in the Middle East. And he said, no, in the entire whole world. So he's basically saying he invented terrorism, which is a very interesting concept.
Well, he did in the modern sense, there's no doubt about it, because in advance of that period, we didn't have the kind of powerful weapons that could be planted by a single individual. What we were using in advance of that was much less powerful things. By the time they started doing their criminal acts, they could blow up whole hotels, as evidenced by Menachem Begin blowing up the King David Hotel and then trying to blame it on Arabs. But the Bretton Woods Accords come into this period as well. You want to discuss that here?
Yeah, well, just sort of point out that the we're talking about terrorism now, and you were saying about modern terrorism. That King David Hotel attack was the highest single death toll ever, and it was only surpassed by the bombing of the United States barracks in Beirut in 1982. So it spent basically about 40 years. It took 40 years, basically, for another attack to result in a greater loss of life.
Well, now we've got the World Trade Center that they committed, so that one goes up to 3,000 now. So they've been they've been exponentially growing their murder schemes around the world.
Oh, definitely, and they'll continue to do so. But yeah, in Bretton Woods, this is where we've got the IMF and the World Bank. It was initially, the World Bank was called the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, but they were approved in that year, 44, with full US participation. Now, the principal architect of this Bretton Woods Agreement, the system really, that will result in the IMF, were Harry Dexter White and John Maynard Keynes. Now, you'll be aware that Harry Dexter White, who actually died a couple of years later in 46, was identified as a Soviet spy whose code name was Jurist. And that was in an FBI memo in 1950. And so we've got someone, again, involved in the formation of the IMF, which is what the Zionists are going to use to enslave countries in the upcoming years, having associations with Soviets, which, as we know, is Bolshevism, which is the Zionists again.
Yep, and we also noticed at that time, through the 30s, large amounts of money from the United States were being shipped to Russia. And it continued all the way up until 1989, in fact, that, and beyond. the monies that were going there and technology in many instances were being ferried across borders by people like Armand Hammer, a supposed Jewish industrialist, but rather a staunch criminal Zionist who was supplying Russia with its needed technology to keep abreast of the developments in the West so that they could remain in the minds of the West as a credible threat. It was because of this credible threat idea that we are still in this period of the weapons kind of mindset here with the military industrial complex, which is also controlled by these people. So yes, it all goes hand in hand. And so let's get over with the war here. 1945. On July 16th, the first successful test of the atomic bomb at Trinity Site, 200 miles south of Los Alamos. Its creator, Robert Oppenheimer, a Rothschild, states in wonder, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. This is who said this now?
This is the creator of the atomic bomb, J. Robert Oppenheimer.
Same Oppenheimer family that runs the diamond industry and the money, the Boer Wars and the gold.
Linked to that, Al, yes.
Oh, isn't that just so special?
And it's interesting because he's down as the creator, whether he actually was the creator.
Well, we know that other scientists, they had a team of several thousand people working on that project.
Oh, exactly. So, you know, he's going to be the one who takes the credit. But, yeah. And the thing is it's a very strange thing to say, and it's satanic, really, almost. And, of course, you know, this bomb is used to kill 140,000 people in Hiroshima and 80,000 in Nagasaki. Now, one thing that I should have slotted in earlier was when we were talking about IG Farben, it was reported that their plants were specifically not targeted in the bombing raids on Germany. And we've got evidence for this as well, because whilst many parts of Germany were in complete ruins, as you said about where our friend Max Warburg was, Hamburg or whatever, you know, and that was bombed to smithereens. The IG Farben plants at the end of the Second World War were found to have only sustained 15% damage. Now, this is evidence that if you were really going to fight a proper war and you're going to want to take out people's ability to manufacture weapons, etc., 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 then you're going to hit the places where they're making them.
That's right.
So why on earth would you not be hitting those factories?
Well, and interesting that the major chemical company out of that area has taken the preeminent position worldwide today, called BASF. And BASF is basically IG Farben in its new invented form.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they've changed name again. I think they're now MTEC or something, E-M-T-C. But they go on to different incarnations. And the other one here is when we mentioned earlier about the Prescott Bush, the tribunals at the end of the Second World War to investigate Nazi war crimes sensed that any materials recording Western assistance to Hitler, which of course covers Prescott Bush, so that's the area that we touched on earlier to show that this was actually censored from the record, and why they would want to censor that and not bring this person to trial, just goes to show what an all-out conspiracy it really is.
Well, and then we get the Rothschilds as the progenitors and the pushing for the energizing force behind the United Nations. For the second time in a 50-year period, they attempt to strengthen the idea of a world organization that controls a super nation control over other nations, and all the way up until today, ladies and gentlemen, because you know I've had Dennis Halliday on a couple of times, who actually quit a 27-year career with the United Nations in disgust because they weren't living up to what was stated on paper. He said, you know, here I am trying to be an honorable man, and I'm watching dishonorable acts being committed by the organization I work for, and I couldn't in good conscience continue to do it. Now, you're going to find out in a broadcast I do later on in the week that, you know, the Iraqi children in advance of the 1990 invasion were inoculated for I think it was polio, And what that did was weaken their immune system just in advance of being poisoned by radioactivity. And if you know anything about Ernest Sternglass's investigation into what radiation does, it sets you up for disease. It gives you a disease condition where you end up dropping dead at a very early point in your life. But we'll go on to that at another time. Okay, William Joyce is executed. Now, they actually got the guy and killed him. For what? For telling the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't doubt at some point that they would attempt that if with others, but here's the point. Do we want to live in a world, Andrew, where these kind of monsters can prey upon us at will? Or is it our duty to the next generation? Because, you know, I am somebody who firmly believes that we are only caretakers of this world as sentient beings at this moment in our lives, and we have to hand this over in the best possible condition to the next generation. That is our primary goal. And what we're doing is by ignoring this, or by the public not turning its attention to these facts, they're abrogating that most important of responsibilities over to a band of the most heinous criminals the world has ever known. And I for one think it is worth giving up everything for to stop these people. And you know, I'm wondering. We'll go on to that some other time. But where are we here? Netanyahu.
If we move over to the, this is where we're getting into the. Yeah, I'll quickly mention this because we talked about the King David Hotel.
Yeah.
And interestingly, what happened 60 years later to the this attack? Benjamin Netanyahu, together with many other Israeli government representatives, dedicate a plaque at the site of this terrorist atrocity. To call these bombers freedom fighters, which should be admired by Israel. And the thing is, to put it in perspective of, and there were even people from, Britain that attended that ceremony and stuff, how wonderful it was. And as a result of this attack, 91 people were killed, which included 41 Arabs, 28 British, 17 Jews, 5 others, and about 45 were injured. It just goes on and on. We've got several of these. This is where we get into the Israel formation stuff.
Well, and it's interesting because they're dedicating this plaque to the murderers who did this, but at the time they denied that they did it, and the only reason that they ever admitted it was because they got caught.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
another false flag.
Doesn't that sound like a current events, ladies and gentlemen? Sure does to me. Let's go to 1947. We're skipping a little bit here, ladies and gentlemen, but there's a lot to read here in between these little conversations that we've been having. 47, it says, British, who prior to World War II declared that there would be no more immigration of Jews to Palestine in order to protect the Palestinians from their acts of terror against both them and the British soldiers, transferred control of Palestine to the United Nations. Now, that's giving the Palestinians from the wolf pack over to what's worse. I don't know.
Well, exactly, Darren.
To the piranhas. I don't know.
Well, what's happened here, and we've already talked about how the Rothschilds were behind setting up the United Nations. At the end of World War II now, they transfer the British control of Palestine to the United Nations, so to the Rothschilds. At that time, the Jews in Palestine, they only owned 6% of it. But the UN did a resolution, which was Resolution 181, which granted the Jews 57% of the land, leaving the Arabs, who at that time had 94%, with only 43%. So what the United Nations are saying, Rothschild created and controlled, all right, this is Palestine, we want Jews to have 57% of it, and so get out. It's as simple as that. And that's what they did. And so this supposed wonderful institution to promote world peace is just going in somebody else's country and saying, right, we want this land for the Jews. Get out.
And it has been up since that time to about 85%.
Yeah, well, what had happened, you see, is this is where we've got the attacks on the Palestinians. And if I jump forward, what we have, if so I really want to go into this. It's very important to explain to people. On the massacre of Deir Yassin.
That's right, right, right.
And the reason I jump forward, and we always go back, is this is where 132 Jewish terrorists from the Erdogan gang, which is led by future Prime Minister Menachem Begin, and Stern gang by future Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir, they massacre 200 men, women and children as they're sleeping peacefully in the Arab village of Deir Yassin. Now, what's happened is...
That's actually, if the description of that attack, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the most vile and disgusting things you'll ever read. Had there been pictures of it, you would have seen babies that were ripped out of stomachs of pregnant women, beheadings, severed limbs of all limbs. They were leaving torsos in the street. It was supposed to be a brutal and vicious, bloodthirsty attack to frighten other Palestinians out of the country, was it not?
Oh, absolutely, Dale. And this is exactly why they did it, because on May the 15th, when the actual UN transfer of Palestine to an independent Jewish state to be known as Israel, on May the 15th, the Israelis launched another military assault on the Arabs. Now, you've got to bear in mind that they've already been given 57% of that country, so the Arabs have already lost a lot, but it's still not enough for these people. What they did was this military assault, which is they used blaring loudspeakers on their trucks informing the Arabs that if they do not flee immediately, they will be slaughtered. Now, of course, the Arabs, knowing of this attack a month before, they just fleed. And 800,000 of them fleed. They asked for help in neighbouring Arab states, but the states didn't want to get involved because they were scared of the Israelis, Jews over there, sorry. And what actually happened, instead of them getting the 57%, they now control 78% of former Palestine, as opposed to the 57% that had been given to them illegally by the UN. And the Arabs, many of them were Christians, they would never pay compensation for their home, property, etc., stolen as a result of these attacks and this UN decree.
And it never gets fully reported in any of the press, and what they use is just like they're doing today, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, there is wholesale slaughter going on in Gaza and in the West Bank right now as we speak. They're killing young girls and children coming out of schools. They're killing people wholesale in the streets. And all you can see on your television set is what terrible things the Chinese are doing to Tibetans, which in fact is a terrible thing. But if you understand the deception here, it is to move you away from examining what the Israelis are doing in their own slaughters. And of course, you know, everybody's attention now turned to China. And you'll notice all the pundits on French television saying we shouldn't go to the Olympics happen to be Jewish. And that's no mistake, because the companies that are putting this propaganda out are owned by the Zionist regime.
Oh, absolutely, Dale. I mean, the interesting thing here with the 800,000 that have fleed, years later, they tried to sort of, claim back some of this property and that was left behind. And what the Jews said was they said, right, the State of Israel then passed the law that only those Arabs who are able to prove their citizenship are allowed to return to their land. And of course, the last thing you're going to go running around for is your birth certificate and things like this when you're being attacked. And so the majority could never prove this, so they just had to lose everything because they couldn't comply with this regulation that they had to prove their heritage before they could return.
And well, and it's also interesting to note that when all of these things are going on in the 50s, in order to keep the United Nations bottled up in the press not paying any attention to the horrors that Israel is meting out against these innocent Palestinians, we start another war. And of course, it's a war against the North Koreans. And so all of the resources of the United Nations are engaged in North Korea. All of the newspapers' headlines are completely covered by North Korean news. And Israel gets a free pass to do all the horrendous things that it wants to do during the 1950s to solidify its control over that strip of land.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, it's such an all-out attack from the banking, the media, and the infiltration is just so vast. It's it's incredible. But, you know, every little element has got its function, and you just need to look at the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion in one hand and this information in the other, and that's the manual for what they're doing.
And the last thing we're going to discuss today is the use of symbolism here in the Rothschild selection, and it was their decision to put what they called the Star of David. Now, that Star of David has no basis in fact, but rather it is a symbol of what? Tell me what that really means, and give people the real scoop on that.
Well, this is the stuff that you generally cover on the French Connection, because it goes more to sort of, you know, biblical origin, etc., and, you know, symbolism of Satanism and stuff. But if you actually look at the Star of David as it was, what that actually was, firstly, brutal fact is it was the same as the emblem that Rothschild had above his counting house when he first became Rothschild. And this was a symbol, and it was red, revolutionary Jews used to carry around in Eastern Europe. Now, if you look at the actual Star of David, it has got six lines, it's got six sectors, it's got six points, which it's actually used in occult worship.
666.
Exactly. And what it also symbolises is Moloch, or Molech, which is the stone owl that they worship at Bohemian Grove. It's also representative of Saturn, which is the esoteric name for Satan. Now, the other interesting thing is the Jewish Sabbath is on the Saturday, which was Saturn's day. You're probably aware of all the days and
yes.
Derived from different things.
Yep.
So really, what we've got here is the hexagram on the Israeli flag represents the number 666. It's also an ancient representation of Satan. And the holy day for the Jews there is Saturn's day.
And I think Tex Mars has done even more research on these facts than you have here, but yeah.
So it's just something that I found very interesting. As you know, I find the barcode, the 666 on, very interesting.
Yeah.
Because why would you use these things? You know, I mean, if you or I were going to put a country together or something like that, we've got to be very careful. We don't want, you know, something like this that people might get superstitious over. You know what I mean? But these people put that stuff straight out in the forefront.
Well, we're in a pitched battle here in the media, in the alternative media, trying to wake up a world. But at the same time, stay true to the idea that we're not out after innocence. And I certainly would not consider myself in any way anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish. And these people aren't even Semites. And I mentioned that 100 times. Most of them, by and large, are Ashkenazim, which are a convert race in the 8th century to Judaism through the Khazarian Ashkenazi connection. And so, in fact, for me to be called an anti-Semite is really a laugh, because these people aren't Semitic people. But I'm not anti-Semitic even in the terms that they describe, because I'm not against anybody who has a belief system they don't carry out into criminal acts. The people I'm out after, ladies and gentlemen, are the ones who are actually destroying our earth, controlling our lives, raping our natural resources, poisoning our environment, and subjugating and enslaving us as human beings. And that group is a very select group at the top of this shield of red, this criminal Israeli mafia that has spanned the globe. It is principled in New York and London and Paris and other main centers, Tel Aviv and of course now Jerusalem. What are we to do about this, Andrew? Are we getting traction, my friend?
Well, I think I really can't think of any other things to do but to keep getting the word out. I think that you've done some excellent work recently. The work that you've done with Mohammed Rafik, I've listened to those files several times, because it's really given me a heads up onto what's going on in the financial world, and it would have been very difficult to see it without going through that.
Well, we were able to actually report that to the public, if they trusted us in our information, well in advance of anyone else. I mean, we were discussing this derivatives mess, and then the subsequent use of it as an issue in the subprime market and stuff, actually 6 to 8 weeks prior to anyone else. And I'm not saying that as a claim to fame, but rather the evidence pointed to these facts. We both of us have a deep understanding of the subject, and it was a simple 1+1 equation when you looked at it. And there's a lot more of this nonsense on the horizon for us, because the financial implosion of our world currencies is not finished yet. So we have lots more to go through. Andrew, you know, putting together these files and doing this work, I am feeling a little bit better that the German public is finally starting to awaken. There's a rumbling in Germany, and I couldn't be happier about that.
No, I agree with you, Dale. And you know, in the end, it's like you said before. I mean, I don't enjoy looking at this stuff because it is very depressing, but I do enjoy the fact that I feel that I do actually have some purpose here to try and wake people up, and I actually feel that I'm serving, you know, the world that I live in a proper way, rather than, you know, just watching sport and, you know, not really doing a great deal reading up on celebrities and all this nonsense, actually finding out what's really happened and trying to wake people up to these facts can be both liberating as well as a difficult experience, with the amount of flack you get from people who just don't want to be told what's really gone on. But I would encourage them to go to your site and keep this resource running. And as I've said to people before, this book is going up. I think we've only got 4 installments left to do, and so you'll be able to get it all off Dale's site if you can't afford to buy it and you just want an electronic version. I would ask people to donate to Dale before they consider buying the book, because his information, his resources is there, and it's growing every day with the new work and the material and the interviews and the book repository stuff he puts up. Really, we don't want to lose that, and it's listener supported, it's supported by donations, and, you know, we need to make sure that this doesn't go away.
Well, we've had a bit of a drying up of help lately, and I probably I think some of that was from my hiatus for a while with my problems here, my computer being attacked, and also financially people are starting to get strapped here. But you know, I've always hoped mail in $5, ladies and gentlemen, into a envelope, and it'll get to the P.O. box. You know, we're not expensive here. The French Connection doesn't need a lot. We do need money, though. And you listeners out there, if you think someone else is going to carry your weight for you, we do need you. You'd be very surprised to know how few people don't, you know, actually send something in. We do get 40, we do get 50 sometimes, but for by and large, it's only a handful of people sending in a couple of quid a month, and these bills keep coming every month. Right now, my stream on the .TV is down because of finances, and we are hoping not to lose that, and it hasn't got the press coverage we should have given it. But I'm one guy, and we got a guy up in Sweden trying to do this stuff, working a full-time job and having other responsibilities. You know, it's a tough slog here. I mean, we've got 3 gigabytes of information from the French Connection over the last few years, and it's quite a job. So please, we need your help, and I appreciate the fact that that people are starting to see the French Connection as the touchstone of quality research. And I understand that there are detractors out there, Andrew, that don't like the French Connection for whatever reason. If you don't like me, please don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. The information is spot on. You can trash me all you want. Go out on the internet and call me anything you want. I could be any bad name you want to give me, but the information is not bad. It is squarely in the camp of fact, and stick to this idea that we're putting out quality information and share it with others. This is what we need them to do, Andrew.
Oh, I agree, and I have done actually recently is I meant to tell you, I've got a link now from my site that links to my interviews page on your site.
Oh, That's wonderful.
And so now people can, it's easier for them to go from my site to yours to download, and then I'm also linking to you, which we've done. I've worked with you more than anybody else in this, whatever they want to call it, this, what we call it, is looking for the true history, really. If people want to come to my site, I have actually got, if they can buy my book on Amazon.com, I think it's on mostly Amazon around the world. If they want to get it from me, it'll go out fine, and I've actually got about 30 of the first editions left, which is what you've got there, Darryl. And then it's just going to be the text file version, which you can get off the internet. So my site is www.thesynagogueofsatan.com. As I say, there's 30 first editions left, and once they're done, I think I've got some text files ones to sell through there, and then I probably would just leave it on Amazon.
Is there going to be a reprinting?
Well, I think that he's, at the moment, I only printed 500 of my copy. Text is up to about 8,000, and I think he's sold about 80% of those. So, yes, I would think there'll probably be another printing coming up for him. He's already done 3 printings of it. So it's just to get the word out there, and I've been fortunate to get the exposure on the book through yourself and text and what have you, so you're actually getting the word out, and that's what I do it for. I like the idea that all these books are out there, because it's, you know, getting the information around the world, and I don't do it for the money. I have a job. I do it to get the word out, and you know, thanks to, and that's why we're putting the book up online, so people who can't afford it, they'll be able to get it online.
Well, here's an interesting thing. What we found with Sophia, who's the girl who did 9/11 Mysteries, when she posted on the internet her full film, she thought that she would be losing exposure and money, and in fact it would shrink her take. But what it didn't, in fact, is exponentially increased the interest in her video, and because a lot of people would like to wake others up, and what they'll do is they'll read it for themselves for free on the net, and then they'll buy the book and give it to somebody.
Yeah, absolutely, Darryl, and you know, I'm looking forward to the stage when I do get rid of the ones that I have at home that I send out, because literally, if I get an order for one book, I will do that there and then, take it to the post office the following day, and they tend to come in drips and drabs. So, you know, it's I always get them out as quick as they're ordered. I get them out airmail for people overseas, simply because you know, I'm not going to wait to get orders for a week and then do them all at once. I'll do them as they come in, so that they get to the people quicker, because I remember books that I ordered were taking 2 to 3 months sometimes to arrive, because they were going surface mail from America. So they would go airmail, and in the States you basically look at it about 10 days to 2 weeks, absolute maximum, from when you make the order to when you receive it.
Well, you're one of my heroes, and I appreciate the effort you've made to be part of this fight, and we will have you back for another installment very soon. Andrew, thanks again, my friend.
Yeah, thank you very much, Darryl.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Darryl Bradford Smith telling you, please, shore up your family's finances. Get a little stored food there. Get the protective kinds of things that you need around your family, including protection against aggressive acts that you might have happen against you. And take care of those people you love. And be a good example to your children and to your family. And be the man of the house needs to be a man again here. We need strong male figures in our families to protect them in these moments that we find things all collapsing around us. And please, be well until the next time. Bye-bye now.